Hello and welcome to Rewatchable number 57 for Pushing Daisies. Today we're discussing episodes 1, Buzz, and 2, Circus Circus. And of course these are for season 2 of Pushing Daisies. I am Danielle, and with me today is Ariana and Colleen. Hello. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
And we are hoping to be joined by Kyle a little bit later. He had a slight emergency that he had to step out for, so hopefully he will be on at some point during the podcast.
You sound so peppy today, Danielle. I like it. Yes.
I try. I mean, I'm not at work today, so I'm happy.
It's a good day.
Oh, I'm peppy.
Good day. Before we start, if any of you listeners out there would like to get in contact with us, please do. We like talking to people, and we really haven't had many people to talk to lately, and it's kind of really sad. We want to share... most of us want to share our love for Pushing Daisies with you. So please, please, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. I know I'm always on the Rewatchable Twitter, so come talk to me. And you can also comment on this post on hypeable.com. So if you're listening to this, the post is up, so come find us. It's really easy to do. So, like I said, we're covering the first and second episodes of season 2 today, and episode 1 is called Buzz with a lot of Z's. And an exclamation point, because those Z's and the buzzing are really important. So here is your synopsis of the day, written by the lovely Ariana. In this episode, there are a lot of bees, and Ned is whining because now that Chuck is alive, she wants to have a life instead of staying stuffed up in his house baking pies as a kept woman should. Meanwhile, Chuck's fake aunts finally leave their house to search for Olive, and Olive throws a well-deserved bitch fit in the middle of the pie hole before resigning to become a nun, as all underserved female characters tend to do since everyone decided the fall of Camelot was all that Hoochie Guinevere's fault. So there's that. That is a scathing review there. Ariana, how are you feeling today?
I am feeling contrary. I don't know. I don't know, guys. I mean, I really wish that I enjoyed this show as much as I'm supposed to, but I don't. So I'm excited for Colleen's rebuttals to change my mind.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm like the lone wolf here today. I'm the only one that likes it. I need Kyle to show up.
He needs to get here now. But yeah, so the first point we have down here, I'm assuming is talking about Chuck and Ned as characters, but it reads, like, seriously, why don't Chuck and Ned wear more clothes?
Yes, okay.
Would you like to take this one, please?
Okay, this was a problem that I seriously had in this episode in particular, but for a while now. Okay, this is ridiculous. If you touch this girl, like even scrape against her, brush by her, as tends to happen when people live in close proximity, she's going to die. So why are you like walking around the house half naked? Like, I would be wearing like a full bodysuit all the time. And then
I wouldn't even be in the same room as her. Like, wouldn't even be in the same building.
Exactly. Like, why does she live with you? I didn't understand that. She really should have moved out, like, ages ago.
Yeah.
She should just not be there. He's the one person who can kill her. She should really be, like, on the other side of the world. But I understand that they're in love.
They're in love.
Yeah.
I mean, he should at least walk around wearing gloves, right?
Yes, I agree with
that. Sure.
Do you
going
go?
Off of that?
Yes, please.
I mean, this just kind of spiraled into, like, a whole thing.
But it's an interesting spiral, and I think you could probably explain it best.
Okay. Going off of that, why does she wear a corset?
Her what is it? What did she say? Her silky intimates?
Yes.
Of like 1930? Yeah.
No, like before that, because in the 1920s, women got rid of corsets because of the like whole Gatsby style thing, flapper going on. So she's from like the 1800s. I don't know why she's wearing a corset, but I guess part of what frustrated me about this corset thing is that I felt like it was just a physical embodiment of so many things that make me uncomfortable about this show, and how I think that Pushing Daisies kind of gets away with its sort of trashy, one-dimensional representations of women because it does have like this Disneyland, like pop-up book feel to it. And so it's able to treat people like they're not real human beings. And like, why is Olive crazy? Why? That's all
I think Olive's craziness is part of her charm.
Oh, definitely.
I like her craziness, but I feel like her craziness in the beginning of season two is kind of like her character development has been wiped out almost. Like, I understand that she's angry that she has to keep so many secrets. I get it. But in the beginning of this episode, she's almost immediately slightly nasty to Chuck. And she's in love with the pie maker again, with no mention to the drug guy who she was like.
I apologize. I'm so sorry.
We're glad you're here. You didn't really miss much.
I mean, you missed like my ranting, but that's it.
Okay.
It's important, but you should know walking into this that we are now like 2-on-2.
Yes, thank you for showing up. I thought I was going to have to defend the show all by myself.
Wait, you guys don't like the show?
Take a look at the doc.
Oh, God. I'm loading it right now. Did I interrupt you, like, mid-sentence?
No, I was just talking about why Olive is suddenly back in love with the pie maker when she was, like, in love with the drug guy.
Oh, no, but she's always been in love with the pie maker.
But not really, because she stopped. And she was good, and she was fun. She was, like, hanging out with Chuck, and they were friends, and all of a sudden now she's, like, angry at Chuck for no reason and not in love with the drug guy.
I have to agree that I'm not sure if she ever stopped being in love with Ned. I just felt like she kind of, like, moved past that in that she was, like, besties with Chuck. She was, like, the one that Chuck turned to, and she took care of her when she was fighting with Ned. And I just loved their relationship and how she was willing to go for like, go help her with the ants and try and make the ants happy.
Same.
And then all of a sudden, the first episode, she's just, like, being kind of a bitch. And I was like, what is going on? No.
No.
Stop. Be friends again. So.
Okay. Well, I have things to say.
Please do.
Let me just, I'm putting in my favorite scene. Oh, the bee one. Oh, I don't remember. Don't mind me.
Okay, so speaking of Olive, because we can get back to Chuck and Ned a little bit later. But speaking of Olive, she goes to a nunnery. And at first I'm like, okay, this is kind of funny. She's doing the whole like Sound of Music thing. But then it doesn't end. And it keeps
happening. She's still there. And I just don't understand.
Olive at the nunnery is my least favorite part of the show. Like, my least favorite thing the show ever did was Olive at the nunnery.
Like, I don't understand why they removed her so completely from everything else that is happening when she works so well off of other people.
Yeah.
Like, yes, she can get into shenanigans by herself, but she's at a nunnery. Also, a nunnery. Like.
But, well, with the nunnery, I think that I think they didn't do it to remove her from, like, the characters per se, but I think they did it for, like, kind of plot development, just because it, like, her keeping all those secrets, man, like, she just wanted to, like, just not, like, it was too much for her. And so I feel like, it's understandable that she'd want to get away, and she was thinking it was just going to be a temporary thing, and I guess maybe Olive Snook just thought, hey, you know, we know a good place for me to get away from secrets and where I won't be able to tell anyone anything? A nunnery. I'll just be here for a couple weeks while I try to, like, sort my mind out. And then she clearly didn't realize that it is not a temporary solution.
Well, I like that Lily's like, oh, you want to get away? I know someplace you can go. Like,
yeah.
Okay, weird.
I don't know. I don't know how to explain why it makes me frustrated that she's at the nunnery. Although I think that you guys have already, like, expressed it. But it does feel, I feel like this happens all the time in stories and TV shows. Like, when a woman reaches her breaking point, she goes to a nunnery. Like, that's how you solve everything. You go to a nunnery. And it's just this trope I'm so tired of.
I mean, I do feel like it was good for her to get away and sort of separate herself from the pie hole and from Ned and Chuck for a little bit. Because she's so, like, she was trying at the end of last season to not be in love with Ned, but she just can't help herself. So I think she definitely did need to get, you know, sort of get out on her own and do something for herself. I don't see why she had to move. Like, she could have just left the pie hole and gotten another job. I think that would have been helpful. Like, I like the whole part where they're like, well, where are you going to go? Like, she doesn't have to move. She doesn't have to leave the city. She can just maybe not serve pies anymore. I don't know. I thought it was funny, but I don't know. I like that they had her make that decision for herself to leave. I just wish they had sort of executed it in a different way. I mean, not the quitting itself. That was great, as we'll discuss further, but.
Yeah, I mean, let's discuss that now.
Okay.
That was quite a scene. I did enjoy that scene very much, so. I had my TV on really loud, I think. And so when that happened, I, like, immediately had to turn it down because I was watching it kind of late at night. Like, oh, shit, I'm going to wake up everybody.
It's so great.
Yeah, that was definitely my favorite scene. Just when she started screaming, like, at this point, I had watched, like, 7 episodes in a row. So I was like, that's exactly how I feel all of
it. I bet that
right now.
Right? Seriously. I was watching this at, like, 7 in the morning, 7 or 8 in the morning, because I just recorded a different podcast earlier today.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad because it's like, crap, my roommate's sleeping.
And she's screaming.
And she's screaming, like, really loud. Like, Kristen Chenoweth scream.
Wake anybody up.
Yeah.
I think shatters glass.
And
but
so,
I felt like it was well deserved because
yeah,
she's
was,
right.
Definitely.
All these people, like she has nothing to do with Chuck's death / disappearance / anything. And all these people have just inserted her into the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And she is right.
Yeah, it's too much for any one person to have to deal with on a daily basis, especially.
Yeah.
She's keeping everyone's secrets. It's terrible.
And it's kind of weird because it all happened so gradually.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really even consider how much that she had on her shoulders until she started screaming. So that was interesting. So one of the plot points in here, because Chuck is now kind of over the fact that Ned killed her dad, but we're still talking about her dad because Chuck was debating on having Ned bring him back for a minute. Would that be a good idea, bad idea? Is it like a non-entity to talk about?
That always makes me think of, if I may make a Harry Potter reference.
Of course, guys. Please
the
do.
The Deathly Hallows, the one brother that has the resurrection stone and brings back his, like, former love or girlfriend or whatever, and then she, like, wasn't the same and then was miserable, and then I think she killed herself and then he killed himself. I don't know. I feel like it would be, like, it always makes me think of that. Like, you can bring him back, but maybe he won't be the same, or it would just, I mean, a 1 minute is certainly not going to be enough. Certainly not going to be enough time for you to get all your last words in, and I don't know. I feel like it would be worse.
It'd make things
to
worse.
Bring him back for 1 minute.
Yeah.
I think it would be worse, too. And especially, well, I mean, this is a fairy tale, but, like, in real life, he would be all, like, decomposed and stuff by now. So,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like, especially, either way, it's going to be kind of bad, because you wake him up for 1 minute, and if he does tap him again and like, kills him in a minute, like, Chuck is going to be really upset, because she's going to be like, well, like, you kept me alive, why doesn't my dad get to stay alive? And then
yeah.
Like, get into that whole thing. And then if he doesn't, and, like, Chuck can is always just if or if he does touch him and then keeps him alive, the guilt they're both gonna feel is gonna be ridiculous, and they're gonna and they have no idea who would possibly like die, and so it just it's a bad idea all around. Like they should just not leave him alone.
Like now that we realize that someone else could die, I'm astonished that he let her live, because like Emerson is right, he could have killed Emerson. He could have killed any. He could have killed like a mother with her there mourning with her kids. He could have killed a kid. Like
And when he did that in the pilot episode, when he brought her back, at that point it kind of made it seem like the only other living being that he had killed was her dad. But with all of these flashbacks, we see that he's done it more than a few times. Maybe not with, like, humans, but with animals and stuff.
It was quite a learning curve.
Yeah. And so that makes me feel, like, a little bit weirder about it. Just because he does know all of the consequences by now. But speaking of dads, Ned's dad was sulking in the corner of the pie hole, right? That was him, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep. So, thoughts on why he's back? Because
thoughts on why he's skulking? Like, why? That's so weird.
Yeah, that was a little weird. And he was, like, in the shadows and, like, I don't know. It made him seem almost like a threat, sort of, as much as pushing daisies can. I didn't know what to do with that, especially since I didn't really know for sure if that was him in the first place.
Well, they've built him up to be such, like, such a bad guy. He just deserted Ned at that school after his mom died and went off and got a new family. So it's funny. I don't even remember, like, his dad at all from when I watched this before. So I'm interested to see how it turns out because I don't remember a thing.
So, I have a theory about why he's back.
Ooh, okay.
And it's a long theory. And keep in mind, even though I'm like a supposed like super fan, like I love the show to death, I haven't seen the show since it originally aired. Yeah, so I'd forgotten a lot of the plot points, like a lot of them. Like I forgot that she even went to a nunnery and it's like, oh, okay, now I remember this. So anything I say can and should not be held against me. but my theory is that, and this is really, really far-fetched and crazy and stupid, but I don't think I don't think Ned is the only person with the ability to keep people, bring people back from the dead, and it might be hereditary. And I think this crazy part of this theory is that Ned died at some point, and his father brought him back to life at a point where they haven't shown us in any of the things, like when he was a little boy and when he left him for good. And maybe the reason he left and started a whole new family is so that he can get away from Ned, because he knows that if he ever touches his son again, his son will die and he can't do it. And he doesn't want to be responsible for that at all. And so secretly, without Ned knowing, he's been there looking after Ned and like he's been watching over him. And this is kind of our introduction of him kind of being there for Ned and showing him, and that's why he's skulky, because he doesn't want Ned to realize that he knows or that he's watching him, because he's gonna want to give him a hug and then he can't handle that.
Oh my gosh, so you are a genius.
That would be really interesting. That would make the show a lot more interesting.
Right. Yeah, so that's my crack theory.
I would like that. I like that crack theory.
Maybe you should write Pushing Daisies season 3.
Or the musical. That's yes. Apparently possibly coming. That would be fun.
I think I would enjoy this a lot more as a musical, because it would be compact and it would have an ending. And I think that these characters are better suited for like the stage because they're so broad.
And also because the episodes themselves are pretty self-contained. Like there are very few overarching plot lines besides like, Olive loves the pie maker. Olive's in the nunnery. I feel like since they're all self-contained, I think it would work as like a single entity sort of thing.
And I'm maybe as a sort of transition, as far as the mysteries of the week go, I haven't really found them compelling as of yet. Because sometimes it annoys me that they don't bring in the killer until like the last 10 minutes. And so I feel like the last 50 minutes have been just a waste. Or, I don't know, I guess I just feel like they don't, the motivations sometimes seem too simple. But how did you guys feel about this week's mystery?
I liked it. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was really fun how they're thinking about, like, just, like, the whole, she's too old to be the face of this bee thing, so we have to bring in someone new. And I'm like, stupid symbolism crack theory. Maybe it's the symbolism of the bees and replacing someone was them. They had to come back from a second season. And so I think, but I'm not 100% positive on whether or not they had new writers for the second season. So it might have been symbolism for, like, bring out the new writers and bring in the kick out the old writers and bring in the new.
A good question. At what point was the show canceled? Do we know? Like, I'm sure it's not within the first two episodes of this season. But
I'm not quite sure.
I don't know either. I'm looking it up.
Okay. I'm just curious because, I mean, you can always sort of see a small shift with shows. Like Veronica Mars, there was a bit of a shift. Obviously, there was a shift in, like, Arrested Development. So it's sad to think about, but I think it's really interesting to know these sort of things.
Oh, it was canceled in November. Like, of the season, it was canceled in November, which is pretty early on, which really sucks.
Okay, so it'll probably be around episodes 6, 8, something like that.
Well, but they have to already have written a lot of episodes before they air.
That's true.
Yeah, they had already at least written the whole season. I don't know.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If so they have shot it yet. Yeah, they had already done all 13 episodes.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I don't know of many shows I think that do that. I thought the B storyline was sort of interesting. I thought it was kind of weird that they were getting killed by having the queen bee in, like, a hexagon thing and, like, shoving it in people's mouths. That was kind of creepy.
Seems like an awfully difficult way to kill someone.
Like, hey, let me shove this in your mouth.
Let me bee you to death. Yeah. I liked it. Like, it was, I just thought it was funny that it was such a, like, mockery of Burt's Bees. Like, the whole all-natural brand. Betty's Bees. And I also really liked the girl that played Kentucky, the one that was killed. It was Autumn Reeser, I think her name is. She was on the OC, and I loved her, and I was so excited to see her on this.
I loved her name. I thought it was so cool. It's a great, like, stage name.
Yeah.
Kentucky Fitz. It reminds me of, like...
Like, the characters have such great names.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like that. They have very, like, I guess pop-up book or, like, fictional names. They're
Bucky very... Barnes sounds like it should be a Pushing Daisies name.
If it was, he would be so much happier.
Oh, I know.
You're killing me with your Marvel analogies today, by the way. Oh, I just had a general question. Bees are around a lot in this show, more so than I thought they would be. Is there any sort of, I guess, connection to what's going on in the story itself, like, that has to do with bees? Or does Brian Fuller really just like bees?
I think it's because Ned is, like, the queen bee, and he just wants all his little, like, female workers to serve him. So.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Oh. Well, I guess that's one theory, yeah.
I thought it was kind of a nice way of, you know, because you kind of wonder why Chuck is so into bees. Like, I always thought that was sort of a weird thing. And I sort of like that this, like, the mystery of the week having to do with bees, sort of, we got to learn a little bit more about the backstory of Chuck and the bees, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, I did like that. And I was wondering if the bees were somehow symbolizing home, because they symbolized home for the Betty Bee person who let them take over her house.
Yeah, that was so scary.
Oh, God.
It's like a nightmare.
Awful. It was a nightmare with happy music playing at the same time, which made it even worse. But
it was like the Pushing Daisies version of Derek's old house. And
yes! I get that reference! I understand that reference!
I don't!
I just watched a bunch of episodes of that, so I understand it. But yeah, no, I agree. It's very weird to go back. They do that a lot, actually, I feel, in this show. They go back to old homes. Like, they go back to Chuck's house frequently. They've gone back to Ned's house, and now they've gone back to Betty B's house, which I actually just noticed. So I think that's interesting. I don't know if there's anything there, but...
I mean, I think that's very much a theme of the show overall, is everyone's sort of trying to find their home, what their home means to them, what their family means to them, because, you know, they don't have much in the way of family, and they're trying to connect with each other in these weird ways, and I think they've all had such disjointed lives that it's definitely some symbolism in there.
All right. So that's, I think, everything that we had to say about episode one. So let's do our favorite scenes and favorite lines really quickly before we move on to episode two. Kyle, would you like to start us off?
One of my favorite scenes was the scene where Chuck got attacked by, like, the guy with the bee hive in his mouth, like the queen bee in his mouth. So all the bees were, like, hiving around him. I just find it absolutely hysterical that, like, she's screaming and he spits something out at her, and like she's still screaming, and she opens her mouth and then she closes it and she keeps it shut. I was like, you can just run away and they'll hive around the thing on the floor and you'll be fine.
You can maybe not catch this thing this guy just spit in your mouth.
Yeah,
I know. So
and they showed like spittle flying through the air too, I think.
So gross.
I guess maybe when you've already been dead, you're just not affected by spitting things in your mouth.
Yeah, I guess so. Is that how that works? All right.
Maybe.
So my favorite scene was actually with a character we haven't mentioned at all yet, and that was with Emerson. I enjoyed when he finished his pop-up book because it insinuated that he had a lost daughter. Before, we had glimpses of his life as much as he would divulge, but I never really thought about his daughter as being lost. I thought of it more as, like, maybe he was divorced and, like, he couldn't see her very often or something. But I really liked seeing a glimpse of this other side of Emerson's life that didn't have to do with scheming.
Yeah, it was really great. It was really nice to see him kind of open up, and that his character really developed way more with that reveal.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising we haven't talked about Emerson more this episode. We always talk about Emerson.
I know.
The most.
He just, like,
I love Emerson.
Do much, I don't think.
Maybe it's because we're learning more about his backstory and, like, the sadder aspects of his life. He didn't have as many punchy one-liners.
He didn't. He really didn't, which was disappointing. But, Ariana, I think you already mentioned your favorite scene, but please remind us.
Yes, it was just Olive's bitch fit. I loved it.
It's wonderful. And Colleen, favorite scene?
I sort of referenced it earlier, but I really love that we find out in this episode that after Chuck's dad died and her aunt's took her in, that it was actually Aunt Lily that bought her, like, I guess you can just buy a bee kit. I don't know, but at least in this world, like, bought her the bees to cheer her up so, like, she could start a new little family and have a new little family to take care of. I just thought that was so sweet. I love when we get glimpses of Lily's humanity when she's not just being bitter and nasty. I thought that was really sweet.
I never thought of her as bitter and nasty. I just thought that she was really sad.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think she was ever bitter. She was just really upset and kind of mourning and just really depressed.
Yeah. Well, I think she just doesn't know how to sort of channel her emotions. And in contrast to Vivian, who's just so sweet and she's like a little kid, and then Lily's the more strict one. I don't know.
Yeah, her sadness, like, manifests itself in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then favorite lines, Kyle.
I think, okay, was my line in this, it was in this episode where he said it, right? I think if you can see the doc.
Probably.
Okay. I think so. Okay, so I'm, because I marathoned it also. But it was Emerson, because I'm pretty sure it's this episode where the ants come to the pie shop, or one of the ants comes to the pie shop, and Ned has to go meet her out front because Chuck is inside, and Emerson sees her coming, and he's like, hide! And as any normal person would do, Chuck is like, what? And she's like, hide your ass!
Oh my gosh.
This is the best.
That was really good, actually. I did enjoy that as well.
Three out of the four this week are Emerson, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. So mine is one of those three. And mine was just when he's talking to the book and he goes, I love you, little gumshoes.
I love Little Gumshoe. That's such a cute name.
Because at first I didn't get that Little Gumshoe was supposed to be his daughter, and then it made it better. But just the way that he said Little Gumshoe made me happy.
Is Little Gumshoe, I think Little Gumshoe is it a play on words on Gumption? Little Gumption? Like, first, because, like, the little girl has a bunch of, like, gumption and resourcefulness in order to go find her dad.
Maybe that sounds good.
Because I have no idea why he called her Little Gumshoe.
I thought Gumshoe was like a detective term. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Gumshoe is like an old timey name for a detective.
Well, go show.
I don't know why.
Let's see. Oh, here we go. According to Urban Dictionary, because we can always trust what Urban Dictionary has to say. Gumshoe is an old slang term for a detective or investigator. Variants include dick or private dick, the connotations of which were not meant to be obscene.
Yes.
But basically, it's because the shoes in the late 1800s were made of gum rubber. So they were, like, really soft-soled. And so to gumshoe meant to sneak around quietly as if wearing gum shoes.
Oh.
Fun facts. Thank you, Urban Dictionary.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for making us sound smart this week.
Yeah.
We would hate to get comments that told us otherwise.
You learn so much listening to Rewatchable.
Droves of comments. I can feel them now. Ariana, your favorite line, please.
My favorite line was when, this is when Ned, like, shows up as the receptionist or whatever, or the assistant. And I was like, oh, my God. I was so annoyed. Like, really? Like, she's trying to do something by herself. Really? And then she's like, how sweet. And then Emerson's like, girl, he is stalking you. I was like, yes, thank you, Emerson. Thank you.
Emerson, once again, as the voice of reason.
Like, this is an unhealthy relationship, people.
And Colleen, your favorite line.
I really do love Olive's, like, behavior in the nunnery, and she, like, can't stop swearing and everything, but I really like when, I can't remember if she's talking to Lily, if she's talking to Mother Superior or whatever, but she says, I spent so much time praying, I've run out of things to say, I'm having awkward silences with God. I just really like that. Awkward silences with God sounds like an album title or something.
I like her pig.
Pigby!
Yeah.
I love Pigby. I like that she tried to see if they can train him to try to hunt for sugar packs for the oatmeal.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so let's move into episode 2, which is called Circus Circus, and here is your synopsis. In this episode, Ned shows distinct warning signs of being one of those possessive boyfriends who ends up on Dateline after kitchen stabbing their girlfriends. Teenage girls everywhere, take heed and step away. When Ned isn't being a control freak with psychopathic tendencies, he helps Emerson solve the case of the missing circus girl and the clown car stuff with dead clowns, which was terrifying, by the way. Meanwhile, Chuck is stuck back at the pie shop, carefully avoiding her aunts, but in the end, she gets permission from her neurotic boyfriend to put on some pants and visit the circus. Also, Olive is still a nun because that is a plot line that just won't die. Thank you, Ariana.
Oh my god. Oh my god, guys. Oh my god. I'm so sad right now.
I know, it's so sad.
I'm so sad.
Okay, I'm sorry. You guys convinced me on why his behavior is acceptable.
Well, his behavior's not the best. This is not Ned's best showing in this episode. I was not my proudest of him, but I don't know.
I have no words. I don't know. I think just because Ned is just he's just in love. And you think he's really, really, really clingy because it's the one thing he has from his childhood that he can keep. And it being Ned, which is kind of rude to say it, but Ned is the only thing that he has left. And so Chuck is the only thing he has left. And so seeing Chuck get hurt or go away with some other guy or do dangerous things is just really upsetting for him because he doesn't want to lose her at all, and he's being overly cautious and he needs to step it down a notch for sure. But he's just, I think his character is just so in love with Ned, and I feel like Ned is also
Ned have guy names, both of them.
Did I say Chuck?
You said Ned. In love with Ned and protective of Ned, which is true. I mean
Chuck. This is I don't like this guy name thing.
See, I hear what you're saying, Kyle, mm-hmm. But all I can think of is how last night I watched this 2-hour Dateline on this husband who ended up drowning his wife in a bathtub because she wanted to leave him. And I feel like that this is what, like, this is how it starts. Like, this is how it starts.
Well, I just also, I think...
loved her so much.
Yeah.
That's why he couldn't let her leave.
Well, behavior is by no means really acceptable in this episode. He's very emotionally immature. Like, he obviously has distanced himself from, you know, not just from women and romantic relationships, but friends. Like, he doesn't let people in. And all of a sudden, he has Chuck back in his life, who was so important to him back when he was little, and he's just like, she has become his life, and he doesn't want to lose her, he doesn't want her to get hurt, even though they're always in such close proximity to each other, which is the main reason she'd get hurt. I think he just doesn't, you know, it's sort of part of his, as hokey as this sounds, emotional journey to sort of learn that he needs to respect her and respect her space and her own decisions.
Yeah, I feel like he's just very emotionally stunted from having grown up with the secret that you might, if you kill anyone, you can bring them to debt back to life, but then if you touch them again, they die. And he's just been like, okay, well, like, I can't tell if anyone know the secret. I just have to stay away from people. My family left me, my dad left me, my mom died. I don't want to get attached to anyone else. And so he spent his childhood not really, like, getting close to anyone or being emotionally prepared for having a girlfriend because he's just kept his heart shut. So now that his childhood love is back, he's just like, okay, well, I have to do everything I can to make sure she knows I love her, and then I also make sure that she's protected. And I feel like, honestly, if the show wasn't canceled, we would have seen Ned grow as an individual in that way. And they definitely could have done it in the 2 seasons that they've had him. But I feel like it would have been like kind of like a slow burn to see him grow and evolve like that. And I feel like it would have gone places. I don't remember what the name of the creator was.
Brian Fuller.
I don't think Brian Fuller intended him to be like this for the entire season.
No.
Series, rather. But that's just me.
That makes sense. And I feel a little bit better about him, but it is a little extreme at the same time. Although we have been getting more... My problem before, I don't think I've recorded with any of you, or if I have, it's been a long time. But my problem with before was we weren't getting a lot of background on them. So I never really thought that they had any other interactions besides when they played Godzilla and like smashed a town. Mm-hmm. So like his love felt really intense for me for a while and I couldn't understand why. And I still think that we maybe need a little bit more on how they were as kids, or even like throwback lines like, hey, remember this time or something, just to kind of rationalize his, I don't know, tight grasp on her. I would feel better about it, but I mean, yeah.
It does seem to me like they fell in love very quickly. And mm-hmm. I understand that they were childhood sweethearts, but like you were talking about with the slow burn with his personality, I think I would appreciate this more if there was a slow burn in their relationship. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they kind of wanted them to have a relationship to keep her around, but I think that there were other ways to keep her around, like if they were still solving her murder.
I see that. I understand that.
Yeah.
That was a very interesting in-depth conversation off of the synopsis. I liked it.
Ariana's are the best. They're always sassy and they bring out good conversation. I miss them.
Sass. This one.
She does. All right. So the first actual point of our discussion is talking about Chuck and her aunts. And this is kind of a good point, I guess. And basically, why don't they just tell the aunt that Chuck is alive, besides the fact that they may have minor heart attacks?
I was thinking about this earlier, mm-hmm. and I feel like I was just thinking about, like, they should tell her, and I can't remember if they do tell them, but I feel like if they ever tell them, they shouldn't just have, like, Chuck, like, pop up out of nowhere and be like, hey, I'm alive, because that would just be traumatic.
That would be awesome.
I think, like, maybe someone can just slowly be like, what if Chuck's alive? Like, I mean, what if? Like, do you think there's a possibility, like, this ghost that you're seeing is just Chuck? And then they'd be like, no, like, stop it. I'm offended that you'd be even saying this thing because I buried her myself. And then, but it would have the idea of Chuck being alive in their heads. And so they'd be like, well, I think she is alive. And then they'd be like, stop it, you're crazy. And then when she shows up, it's they've already had the idea in their head and it's hope in their head. And so it's like, oh, my goodness, you are alive.
I think that there are ways they could do it. And I was really disappointed. I thought for sure by the end of the first season they would know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty disappointed that they don't. I feel like they would be much better utilized if they did know she was alive.
And they wouldn't even need to tell the aunts about Ned's abilities. They could just tell her that Chuck somehow like survived, or that wasn't her in the coffin. I don't know.
And this brings up.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. Well, I was just going to be negative again and say that part. I think that a small part in Ned, a small part that he doesn't want to admit, likes that she is the only that he is the only familiar thing to her.
I think it's. I mean, it's certainly selling. I always kind of thought it was selling the aunts short, like saying, oh, they won't be able to handle this information. Like, they would be happier that she was alive than they would be, I guess, shocked or horrified that this secret had been kept from them. But what is even more interesting to me is the whole premise, you know, the whole importance is, you know, we can't let Lily and Vivian find out that Charlotte's alive. What about the rest of the world? Like, she just...
Exactly.
She just goes out everywhere and not in any sort of disguise. I feel like if some chick was murdered on a cruise ship, like lonely tourist Charlotte Charles, her face would be all over the news and people would recognize her. Like, we've all seen enough of, like, CNN coverage of people being kidnapped or murdered. We've seen their faces. If you saw that person on the street, or if that person was, like, in your Betty's Bees factory or wherever, like, you would recognize her. That's what's always baffling to me, is that's, like, it's not an issue. Nobody recognizes this girl.
And the only time she wears a disguise is when she goes to the morgue.
Yeah.
Because
sunglasses.
Because he would be the only one who would recognize her because he looked at her dead body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy's funny. He knows something is up.
He does.
And he just doesn't even care.
No, he just wants paid. Money. Yep.
Much like Emerson.
I wanted, along with that, the scene where Chuck is hiding from Vivian, I just thought was so, it was the first time that I felt like Chuck was a real human being. And yes. I think it was mostly from the actress. She just looked so heartbroken. And it made me think about, like, what if I had to hide that I was alive, say, from, like, everybody that I cared about. But I still, like, had to see them, but they couldn't see me. That would be heartbreaking. This is a lot to deal with. And she's handling it interestingly.
I did like that she, like, threw herself over the counter every time.
Yeah.
Smashing dishes.
Like, no worries about breaking anything. Yeah.
No one will hear that.
No. Let's see. Oh, more clothing discussion. Chuck wore pants this episode.
Yes, she wore pants, which I was happy for because I thought she would look ridiculous in a giant dress at the circus. But she did still wear heels, so.
Aren't all your shoes high heels?
Obviously, especially when I go, like, muck around in the dirt like she was. I make sure to wear heels.
It doesn't even bother me because I love every single thing that Chuck wears. I think all of her outfits are adorable. So I don't care how practical or impractical they are. I love them.
I think they're adorable. And I would like to wear them, but not in the instances that she does. Like, I would love to have them in my wardrobe for, like, work or a special occasion.
But well, like, her outfit not this the sewers. Week. I thought was great because I thought that it was practical enough. I mean, it just had just the right amount of whimsy with the colors of the pants and stuff, but it was practical for going to the circus. But like really would, if she had worn flats, ballet flats, that would be just the same. Like it doesn't change anything. It's still a cute outfit. It just makes sense.
Did we get more about Emerson's daughter? Oh, yes, we did, because Emerson was trying to connect with the emotionless mom. Or emotionally emotionless mom.
She was funny. She's like, I'm very upset.
I'm freaking out right now. Can you not see it? And while I enjoyed his reflections, let's say, on his missing daughter in the last episode, I agree with Ariana here that his reflections on his missing daughter when trying to connect with somebody else felt kind of forced, or I don't know, they didn't really strike me in a way that like the pop-up book and the whole little gumshoe thing did in the previous episode. But I'm assuming since they brought it up 2 episodes in a row that his missing daughter is going to be a plot point this season. Take that as a no comment.
Yep.
The circus itself, let's talk about the circus itself, because I feel like it's a very good representation of what the show can look like. I know before on an episode I was on, we were talking about how it's kind of Tim Burton-esque in the way that the visuals look, that they're very bright, there's a lot of contrast, and I feel like the circus fits into that a lot. Even though I'm not a huge fan of clowns, I felt like it was a good fit for the show and a good fit to kind of show off the visual aspect of the show.
It was great. Like with the acrobat that just, like, you don't see him being on an acrobat line. You just see him pop up from upside down and they look up, but they don't, you don't see what he's hanging off at. And you're like, what the heck? This guy's just hanging upside down and they're talking to them. Like what's happening? And then like the window, when the human cannonball goes through the window and it breaks and they have a shot where they're all looking out the window, mm-hmm. It's not like a normal broken window. It's like a patterned, very fake,
like teeth
thing going throughout the entire window. And it was great. Like, I love that whole tone.
Yeah. Like, the circus was perfect. I'm surprised they didn't do a circus themed episode until season 2, because it seems perfect for Pushing Daisies. There's so many bright colors and weird characters. It's like it's made the perfect topic, just made for Pushing Daisies.
And it has that slightly creepy tone, mm-hmm. underneath everything, which, I mean, a guy touching people to bring them back from the dead. Like, that's slightly creepy.
And it doesn't get creepier than that.
Yeah, so I feel like that fits as well. So I'm surprised, too, that they waited this long or that they haven't done anything like a circus yet.
I thought that this episode, for me, was the most aesthetically beautiful that they've done so far, just because, like you were talking, the creepy feel. Usually they do have really bright colors and whimsical colors and stuff, but it feels kind of out of place, I think, sometimes. But what I liked about this one is that it wasn't just bright, that it was kind of like dirty and grimy, which I thought was really cool for this show, considering everything that's going on. It provided a nice contrast to, like, the pie hole that feels so clean.
You said, I mean, with feeling clean, I thought it was interesting that out of everything that they could do that involved a circus, that the whole plot line was about a runaway girl who's supposed to be, like, this really nice girl. And I honestly can't even remember how it ended right now, because I was more interested in the circus part of it and, like, seeing the circus part rather than the girl. I don't know if anybody else felt the same.
Yeah, it's like the mystery itself was not really, it was like circus adjacent. It didn't actually have something to do with the circus itself.
Yeah, that's how exactly I feel, what I was trying to say.
That's how I feel with most mysteries, that, like, the ride is fun, but I don't really care about the ending at all, ever.
Yeah, just especially
for mysteries in general.
Yeah, especially with, like, if you know what the ending's going to be, like, they're going to find her eventually. Like, we know she's not going to be dead. So, like, it's all about the journey and how they're going about finding her.
And, like, I didn't even care that she was missing. I didn't even care. That sounds terrible, and I'm sorry. I do care when people go missing.
She's not real, and she doesn't feel real, so you don't care.
No, because all we were told...
didn't really seem to care either.
Yeah, and all we were told was that, oh, she's a really nice girl, she's an innocent girl, and then someone's like, no, she's not as innocent as she seems. And it kind of went back and forth like that, with people talking about her in this way. But that gave me no insight as to who she was as a person or what her motivations were, besides, like, oh, my mom is emotionless, so I'm just going to get away for a while.
She looked really familiar.
The mom?
No, the little girl.
Oh. I can't remember what her face looked like.
I liked that she looked like a little girl. Sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, her mom? Oh, I know exactly where
her mom is on Suits.
Her mom is a good comedian and is on, like, commercials a lot and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know about the girl. I'll have to look it up at some point.
What was her name? I'm looking it up right now.
The mom
is Rachel Harris, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's pretty famous. Nikki Heaps? Is that her name?
Yeah. Because I kept thinking it sounded like Nikki Heap from Castle.
Yeah, I was like, what? Oh, Nikki Heaps is a character.
Yeah.
I thought it was the actor's name. I was like, what?
Has she been in anything? Are you looking at her again?
She was on Grey's Anatomy this season. That's probably where I know her from.
That could be.
She was on Lie to Me, and...
She was in The Conjuring.
She was on Gilmore Girls, too. Yeah, I probably recognized her from Grey's Anatomy.
Probably. Okay, so apparently a discussion point in our doc here that I didn't see until just now is, why does Danielle hate clowns? And the answer to that is because clowns are creepy as hell.
No, they're not. I'm really looking forward to American Horror Story with the killer clowns.
I am too. It's
oh my god.
So great.
It sounds like a terrible idea. I was debating on watching American Horror Story, like, just in general, but... No, not clowns.
It sounds so cool. I wish that I wasn't such a scaredy cat that I could watch this season, because it looks really cool. I love circuses, even though the clowns are creepy.
It's just like, these people have painted on faces, and you don't know what their faces actually look like. Like, they could be smiling at you maliciously or really frowning, and you would never know because their face is painted. And they look nice, but they could not.
That's the best part.
It's the best part. It's the worst part. So,
oh my gosh, I was dying laughing when they're pulling the clowns out of the car, and then it's just like one after the other.
Wait, there's one more. Wait, another one.
Like, oh my god, there's one, more in the
and
back.
Then I was like, yeah.
That was kind of my favorite scene because it was funny to watch him pull them all out, and also because they were dead and they couldn't.
That was my favorite scene as well.
Yeah, so let me not talk about clowns anymore or think about clowns. Is there anything else that really happened in this episode? Oh, Olive gave away all of her possessions unwillingly. I felt like that was kind of rude.
That was so sad.
I wanted to talk about Chuck's likability, because the last time I was on, which was on forever ago, with Kyle, a lot of people were talking about how they didn't really care for Chuck, and so I wanted to know how you guys felt about Chuck now.
And I can't say anything, because I already love Chuck.
And yeah, me too. I always like Chuck. Oh. Yeah. So, newbies, what did you think?
AKA Danielle, spotlight's on you.
Oh, good. Again, why does Danielle not like Chuck? That is not true.
She's too clown-like for you.
Oh, gosh. Yes,
I think at first she was.
What?
I think at first she was too clown-like for me. I didn't care for her in the first two episodes.
She's growing on me because she feels a little bit more like a person now. And I guess since she's kind of faced the fact that she died before and she wants to do it right again instead of being like a recluse, like her aunt. Like, that kind of gives her more of a personality or makes her more of a human to me. So I do like Chuck better than before. She's not one of my all-time favorite characters I've ever seen on a television show or anything, but I do like her better than I did before.
I think my opinion of her has changed a lot. I really didn't care for her in the first two episodes because she kind of felt like an annoying little sister to Zooey Deschanel. And I really can't stand that whole thing where, like, grown women act like little girls. It really frustrates me.
Dream girl.
Yes, the manic pixie dream girl. I hate it. But I feel like now I've realized that that's not really her, that she is, like, a real person who wants to act like an adult. And I feel like it's Ned who wants to keep her as his perfect manic pixie dream girl. And that's what frustrates me now more than Ned. I mean, more than Chuck. Herself.
Yeah, I think as I was rewatching the episodes, I thought of what everyone was saying, that they didn't really care for Chuck, that they thought she was, you know, that whole Zooey Deschanel thing, and she was too perky and whatever, wasn't like a realistic character. I think the finale, when she's found out what really happened to her father, and that it was, you know, Ned's fault, whether, you know, even though it was unintentional, and she was mad and she was depressed. And I felt that really added a lot to her character. Like, it certainly showed a different side. And I was hoping that that episode and seeing that side of Chuck would change people's opinions about her. And I think now, as we're going along and she's sort of, you know, trying to break out on her own, get her own apartment, try to get a job, get more involved in these cases, you know, She's standing on her own two feet and trying to be her own person in a more, I think, becoming a more well-rounded character than just, da-da-da, I'm alive, hooray.
What's your last words? Please tell us. Yeah, I agree. She's definitely more fleshed out now. And even when she was sitting in the office for Betty's Bees and, like, thinking about how that was her first job interview.
Mm-hmm.
That things like that make her feel more real to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're doing a better job with making her a more real person than they have been, at least in my opinion, for Ned. Because, yeah, I feel like Ned is kind of caught in a perpetual state of childhood almost, even though he, for some reason, was able to open his own pie shop and run a successful business. Like, he doesn't feel like a real adult to me. Let's then finish up with this episode, because I feel like we got through most of it, all of it. So let's do... What?
Sorry, I wasn't very talkative. I apologize. There's a lot to say and a lot to not say, because I love everything. And I feel
then
like
defend it, Kyle. Defend it.
I think Chuck is just a really... I don't know how to say it. Like, she's a character that I think is meant to kind of be not like a stereotype, not necessarily a stereotype, but I feel like they weren't trying to make her the perfect female character, I guess. And so making her be all girly and stuff, like, it's just part of the... I don't know. I'm going to offend people if I keep going. I'm going to stop.
It's okay. You can offend people. Danielle and I have already done that countless times today. So
you're in a safe space here.
I feel like the charm of the show is its ridiculousness, and maybe I don't know if you guys have ever like actually thought about it, but like maybe the portrayal of Ned and Olive and the whole female equality thing, and the fact that they're wearing high heels everywhere, is just like a mockery of society and just kind of like a joke, and not like that they actually think that they should be wearing high heels everywhere, but like it's just like, this is a fake world, this is a fake woman, and this is what these characters do, because this is not the way that the real world is, or the way it should be.
It's just another fantastical aspect of the show.
Exactly. And it's not in any means way of saying that she should be wearing high heels and she should be really girly all the time, but just a mockery kind of that type of form, you know? So I don't know. That was my opinion about the whole thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that that's a really mature and deep way to look at it, Kyle.
Yay. I didn't offend anyone.
I think another thing that also sort of works against Chuck is she is the other female character opposite Kristen Chenoweth, and Olive is such a good character. She's funny. She's like, she has so many great lines, great scenes, great even like physical comedy, that I feel like it's almost impossible to not like Olive. And then it's like, oh, well, but Chuck's good too. Like, I don't know. But I guess maybe that's me. I never like the leads as much as, well, with the exception of Lee Pace, who's adorable. I never like the leads as much as I like the supporting characters.
I get that, because the supporting characters kind of get, not necessarily more fleshed out, but like, I don't know. They're just more interesting because you get to see less of them, and so they get more, it's more concentrated, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they're usually funnier.
I do think that that's often the case, but I can think of examples off the top of my head. Like, for example, the last two rewatchables we did, I feel like Veronica Mars is the most interesting person on Veronica Mars. And, like, Mal Reynolds, I feel like he's probably the most interesting person on Firefly. So, like, I can understand supporting characters are usually the funniest. They get Dick to be quirky and just be quirky. Yeah.
Dick. Corny. Dick. Sorry. Veronica Mars. Stop.
I know. You're just saying dick a lot.
So. I don't mind that. That's fine.
Danielle loves dick.
So do I.
Oh, God. I guess what I'm saying is I would like the leads on this show to be deeper. Like, if they're not going to be quirky and funny like Olive and Emerson, I want them to be deep and interesting.
I agree with that.
But I think maybe it's also maybe just not the nature of the show. Like, Veronica Mars is obviously a much heavier show dealing with, although Pushing Daisies deals with death, it's, you know, it's Veronica Mars is a lot deeper in dealing with different situations. Pushing Daisies is overall a more lighthearted show, and I guess, I don't know, it's just, to me, didn't strike, like, I'm not bothered by their characters not being deeper, because it's, I don't know how to articulate what I'm trying to say.
I feel like they're deep enough for the show.
It's just, because I think that's what's, it's interesting to me that a lot of you know, people have had issues with the mystery of the week and not finding them very compelling. And I think, you know, if I'm watching something like Law and Order, that I want to be more suspenseful and trying to figure out who the killer is. But with this, I feel like the mystery of the week is not so much necessarily about being a mystery as much as introducing you to these funny characters and funny environments and outrageous scenery and funny names, rather than trying to really involve. Like, sometimes I feel like people are expecting more from the show than what it is, or something different from the show than what it is.
Mm-hmm. And that could be like my problem, because I've been wanting to watch Pushing Daisies for a while, and I think not watching it and hearing things about it kind of built something in my mind that is not something that I got. And so it's been like a transition trying to see it for not what I perceived it to be.
Yeah. And I do that a lot with shows. So I can see how that's disappointing coming at it from that.
Yeah. I guess that, like you said, Danielle, my expectations were really, really raised. I think because I had heard so much, like so many people love it. And so many people feel like it was canceled too soon. And so I want to feel that way, too. I want to love it.
I want to, and yeah.
So I feel like disappointed when it's not living up to my expectations of what it was going to be.
I feel like it's just, especially with doing a podcast on any given show, like you're going to be more analytical than anything. Like you're going to be more analytical doing rewatchable and watching the show than if a friend was like, oh, you should watch the show and like... And, like, tell me what you think, because you're just going to watch it and, like, you're going to try to enjoy it and not really think about a lot of it too much. But then when you start analyzing, that's when all of the flaws start coming out and you just start thinking about it, and that's all you can think about then. So I think doing this podcast, it probably didn't help a lot with the high expectations, because you're then analyzing it way more.
It's also such a different experience binge-watching a show rather than watching it week to week, like, mm-hmm. you know, Kyle and I did when it was on, because even, you know, it's, you just notice so much more and you just forget things that happen week to week or season to season. But when you're sitting down in one day and watching like 7 episodes, like it's all at once, all in one shot. It's definitely a very different reaction and things relate, you know, things that happen in certain episodes relate to each other in different ways than I remember.
Yeah, it's something to think about.
I feel like this was very therapeutic, guys.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel better than I did a few days ago when I was watching it. And so hopefully
me and Colleen should be on more episodes where we just convince you guys to just love this show to death.
I'm
glad that you're like, I was so nervous when I read the doc and it was just like,
oh, I know.
That is the worst. I don't have anything to say about this. I'm like, this is going to be a boring podcast. So I'm glad that you guys at least, like, are open-minded and that you, like, have things to say about it. And you have good reasoning for the things that you don't like, which I like.
Yeah. And I want to like it so badly. So it's not like I got turned off by something and then I'm just like grumpy about it. Like I feel guilty and terrible for not enjoying it as much as other people do.
I know. I feel like I made too many Horcruxes and now I just don't have enough soul left in me to like enjoy the whimsy of this show.
Oh, you're such a Slytherin.
It's true.
But yeah, so hopefully by the series finale, we'll be feeling it. A little bit, maybe. But until then, let's wrap up this episode with our favorite,
because we didn't see them.
I
just realized I was blowing up a balloon while you guys were talking and I was unmuted. I apologize.
It's totally okay. It goes with the circus theme.
It's appropriate.
So, Kyle, would you like to tell us what your favorite scene was? Because it also happens to be my favorite scene.
Yeah, boy, because it's the car scene with all the clowns. I know we touched on it earlier, but it was hysterical because like I was expecting it, but even when I was expecting it, it was still funny
because
it was a clown full of cars, and then a clown full of cars.
It was a clown full of cars. That's terrifying. Oh, <God. laughs> Oh, that'd be so scary.
I mean, it carved for clowns. And then when they started taking the clowns out of the car, like the stretch limos, and then there's this one clown where he had super long legs and he didn't fit on the thing. And it was just great.
It's like the oldest clown joke in the book, yes. But it was still, like, everyone saw it coming, but it's still so good, because it just keeps going, like, they just keep carrying more clowns past, and you just see the giant shoes on the gurney or whatever it is. Oh my god, it's so funny.
I was not expecting it, even though, like you said, it's the oldest joke in the book, that, like, I was surprised every time they took out another clown. That's good. The old ones are the best, guys.
Ariana, your favorite scene?
I loved when Chuck tricked that girl into telling her where her friend was. I thought it was so funny and pretty realistic. And also, I thought it showed character to Chuck, that she's resourceful. And she was making tons of sense, I thought, when she was like, I should be the one to go because I'll be able to talk to the girl and, hey, you have to bake the pies. So... I was like, yeah, good for Chuck.
Yeah, I like that part too.
Mm-hmm. And Colleen?
I loved the circus setting in general. I loved all the circus folk just walking around as the main characters were having their conversations. But I really loved when, I think Ned was going to walk away or, you know, they were off to talk to their next person. And I think it was the human cannonball guy, like, walked by in the background, like, lugging his giant cannon. And he was, like, in Ned's way, so Ned just sort of stands there awkwardly as this guy's like, ugh! I laughed so hard. It was so funny.
It went by so slowly, and then just, like,
like, one of those ridiculous things that just goes on, like, a second too long that makes it even funnier.
Yes. Good choice. That was a good one. All right, favorite lines. Kyle?
My favorite line comes from Emerson once again. I have a feeling that there's not going to be an episode where my favorite line never is not Emerson. But it's the episode... It's the part where the mother is reunited with her daughter and she's like really upset with her, and like having known the feeling that like his daughter is gone and he's just trying to get her to like accept, like love her daughter, and he's just like, love her. It's like, love her. Love her. And it's just the best, because it was just really hysterical. He's just like really upset, like, damn it, woman, let's do this.
Just do it. Do as I say.
Yeah, so that was my favorite.
That was sweet.
It was good. Mine was some guy named Pierre, and I don't remember who it was. I got this off of IMDb.
He was the circus like director or whatever.
Was played by
the guy Grumpy? That plays Grumpy on one.
Okay, he was Grumpy. Okay, yeah. I did catch that. I didn't catch Herman, but I did catch Grumpy. but Grumpy says, there are two things clowns make around here: balloon animals and enemies.
Hit Danielle right at home.
It did, because I hate clowns. I don't buy balloon animals, but clowns.
I thought that line was so good. That was like probably my second favorite.
It's perfect. Ariana, favorite line?
Mine was TMI from Ned, when he's like... He's talking to Emerson, and he goes, it's hard enough being in a relationship where we can't touch, but we improvise. We figured out ways around that. I've even built contraptions. And Emerson goes, do you understand how a head works? Do you? Because every time you say something, I got to think about it. And I was like, yes, Ned. Like, that was not a visual we needed. Thank you.
I just imagined, like, I don't know where I heard, saw, or thought about this, but like having like a person who's just really, really fat and they can't get up on their own, building a contraption so they can have sex. And I'm just like,
oh my god.
I'm just thinking. I'm just like,
everyone does
that like thing. Props him up, and then there's plastic, and then it bends and down so he can just like,
oh my gosh. Okay. Let's keep this rated like PG. 13 at least.
Oh gosh, Colleen, please, you're
in
time, please.
I'll try to turn it around. I really liked the line when Chuck kept asking Ned how he had slept the night before, which was sort of annoying, but and he obviously hadn't slept well, but he keeps saying that he did. And when she asks him again, he says that he slept well. He slept deep and perfect, like a nap in the backseat of a car after a day at the beach. And I love that, because just that, like, image that I feel like everyone knows that feeling. Like,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Being a little kid and running around on the beach in the sun all day, and you're so tired on the way home, you just curl up, and it, like, is the best sleep you ever have. I thought that was a great image.
Yes. I love sleeping in the back of cars.
Yeah.
All right. So we do have a few pieces of listener feedback this week. Not very many, but a few. Ariana, would you like to take that tweet, please?
Yes. This tweet is from Gertrude at MKITIPVE. What do you guys think that means? Makita Puff? It's cool. Anyway, she says, I remember when I first watched Pushing Daisies, I kept being reminded of Mitch Clow when Ned was talking. Their voices are similar.
I don't hear it. I don't hear it.
I don't
all.
Either.
I'll have to think about that one the next time I watch.
Well, obviously, I find Mitch Clow more endearing than Ned.
But... obviously.
Oh, yeah. But she had a really cool pro pic. She had, like, these cards in front of her face. She looked like a cool card shark. It's like, ooh, go Gertrude.
And we did have a hypeable comment this week. It was interesting. Kyle, would you like to take that one?
Yeah. The comment was from Prisoner Zero, and he says, I can't believe nobody got why the kid was a jerk to everyone. It's a pun. The kid was heartless.
Duh. Who was on that? What, weren't you on it, Colleen?
I was on it. I think we got it.
Okay.
He was.
He doesn't think you got it, Colleen.
I know. Well, you know, as a Doctor Who fan, I know better than to trust anything Prisoner Zero says.
Yes, this is true.
Oh, is he like a common commenter?
Oh, no.
Prisoner Zero is a character.
It's an alien.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know anything about this particular Prisoner Zero, but okay. I'm going to imagine it's Prisoner Zero from Doctor Who commenting on Hypeable, which seems legit.
Got it. Okay. I understand.
Well, I didn't get the pun, so you helped me, Prisoner Zero.
I didn't either. I just thought he was a huge jerk.
I didn't either. I thought he was just an asshole.
Yeah.
Maybe I was the only one that got it, and I just did not verbalize it clearly. So I apologize, Prisoner Zero. Yeah. But I still don't trust you.
All right, so if you want to be like Gertrude in Prisoner Zero, which we hope that you do, you can contact us through email, Twitter, and Hypeable. So you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. If you're a newbie, you can email us with crack theories, or if you're a super fan, you can just email us with how much you love the show. You can email us with whatever you want to. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. If you want to make some sort of succinct argument or just say that Ariana and I are wrong. I mean, you can do that too.
I mean, we're not, but if you want to say we are.
Yes, you could do
that's
that.
That's fine.
Perfectly acceptable. Or you can comment on this post on hypeable.com. We like that sort of feedback too. I'm always looking at the podcast posts to see what people are saying, if anything. So please start a conversation there. I'd love to talk to you, especially during work hours when I'm bored. And if you like us enough, please leave us a review on iTunes, because the more reviews we get, the happier we are and the happier everyone else is, because that means that other people can find us and we can all be one big happy Pushing Daisies family. Doesn't that sound nice? I think that sounds nice.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it sounds really nice.
Maybe if we get more iTunes reviews, it'll make you guys like the show more.
That's an incentive. It's a good incentive.
I'll leave an iTunes review.
Let's go with that. Thank you, Polly. All right, so that is all that we have for you this week. And by all, I mean it was a pretty long episode, but with good discussions. So hopefully it will tide you over to next week, where we will be discussing episodes 3 and 4 of season 2. So until then, I'm Danielle.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Colleen.
And we'll see you later. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
That was good.
Yay! Yay.